And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where nobody sleeps ever anymore because the NBA just had what I'm pretty sure is the wildest, at least in terms of pure volume, I don't know how many hours, 24 hours, some amount of hours where everyone changed teams and everything's different and now the whole league is different. And to help us suss it out, making his debut on the Low Post Podcast, one of my favorite guys that I've started to work with this year. I really enjoy it. Jay Williams, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want you to know that I've lost my voice. I did not sleep last night because my daughter had 101 degree temperature. Plus, my wife and I were talking about free agency the whole night. But I'm here because I was a Low Post player back in the day when I was in high school. I've always felt the Low Post Podcast and happy to be here.
You are a listener.
I am a listener. I am.
Well, now you're
I'm a fan of yours, bro. Come on, man.
Thank you. It stinks when the kids have fevers. It's no fun.
My first child. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm lost.
And you panic, right? You'd be like, 101, that's high. Like, what do I do? And
I almost threw her in an ice tub last night. I have no idea what to do.
You got to have the spouse that balances you out. Like, yeah. I'm the worrier, and my wife is like, you just go away. You're not helping. Okay. We can't do this now. Kevin Durant. On pace before his Achilles injury to be one of the 10 greatest players in the history of basketball at worst, and maybe the all-time leading scorer in the league, outside shot at that, is now a member of the Brooklyn Nets, which is a basketball team that 7 years ago played in New Jersey and had a mascot that was a fox.
Hey, nothing wrong with New Jersey. Nothing wrong with the fox, okay? I'm from New Jersey.
I taught high school in New Jersey.
All right.
I'm just saying, I had to take like two modes of public transportation to get to their games and cross bodies of water and stuff.
Yes.
And it was a fox that wore sunglasses, I think. It was a little bit embarrassing. Now they have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. So we all knew they were getting Kyrie, even if you can't understand a damn thing he posts on Instagram.
Illuminati.
The debate was, would KD join him? He can't be recruited and all this. Okay, so when did you know?
I probably knew a little bit that day, but I ultimately did not know. I went through a series working with Rich. Rich obviously led the charge because Rich Kleiman, who handles everything, is incredible, and he's been on top of everything. And for me, I always left a gap there because I didn't want to know all the information. If I knew all the information, then I would compromise myself here at work. So that was important to me. Zach, I'm not a reporter. I love Woj. I think what Woj did yesterday was mind-boggling. What you guys do, the way you can go back and forth, mind-boggling. I can't do that. I don't have the capacity to do that. But I did hear snippets here and there. And I knew that the thing that won this over, I think, for Kevin – and we're going to eventually do a sit down to talk all this through, him and I. It was Kyrie. I think it was Kyrie. I think it was the franchise. I think it was Sean Marks. I think it was the way they handled themselves throughout the process. I think it was the way that Sean has maneuvered different schemes from day one when they traded Thaddeus Young and they got Caris LeVert.
And 3 years ago, by the way.
3 years ago.
3 years ago, they had, 3 years ago, almost to the day, maybe a couple extra weeks, they had nothing, zero, no players of consequence, no picks, nothing. 3 years ago, not 20 years ago when the Knicks were relevant, not 10 years ago, 3 years ago. Now they have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and like six interesting young players.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, continue.
DeAndre Jordan, I thought DeAndre Jordan was going to end up in L.A. somewhere.
I made a not nice joke about DeAndre Jordan.
Oh, where'd you go?
In my column today.
Where'd you go?
I called him, he's now the big man, Jarrett Jack, in that his primary value is that he's friends with much better players.
Hey, look, friends with much better players can get you paid your money though. What,
dude,
$10 million a year?
4 years, 40 million. And I was like, they took a discount for DJ? Dude, I almost asked this semi-sincerely. Does Kevin know who Jared Allen is?
Oh, yeah, he loves Jared Allen.
Because he's better significantly than DeAndre Jordan.
But you still need depth at that low post position.
Okay.
I think DJ brings a roughneck kind of mentality to the table for them, like an enforcer. And I think Jared Allen could be an enforcer, but Jared Allen's also still young.
We're off track.
Yes.
Kevin, we left off with Caris and the impressive maneuvering that Sean has done.
He loves Sean Marks. He's loved their facility. I think, and I said this multiple times, Zach, you know, being in the room with him that night after he got hurt, first off, was it just a emotional roller coaster? Because Kevin wanted to play more than anything. And then watching that and watching him make the decision to say, I'm going to go in my own direction back to New York to see my own team, I never felt like Golden State and Kevin Durant would be on the same page again. I felt that. I couldn't confirm that. That wasn't something I was going to take. Kevin's his own man, but I felt that. And then just watching the natural progression of things about, you know, expectations weren't set as far as him coming back, his team saying he wanted to come back around game five, game six. But the pressure.
His team meaning Rich.
Rich.
And his doctor.
And his doctor saying he wanted to come back around game five, game six. But ultimately, what Golden State doing. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, and I get into an argument with our guy Schiffman about this all the time. He's like, well, you know, they're setting expectations. You know, it's gamesmanship as far as, you know, is Kevin going to come back game one? Is Kevin going to come back game two? And realistically, I mean, how much gamesmanship is there really in that? Do you see that
in terms of confusing the Raptors?
Yeah. Are you really confusing the Raptors?
I don't think so. Honestly,
I don't think so either.
I spent a lot of time with the Raptors all year in that series. And I think Nick Nurse is a very chill coach. And I think, look, we're smart enough to have a game plan for Kevin Durant and a game plan for not Kevin Durant. It's like not rocket science.
Agreed. So I think expectations weren't set, which I think, look, Kevin is on his phone. Like we're all on a phone. He's a basketball savant. He always is following basketball all the time. Like that's his craft all the time. 24/7, 365. He loves it. Always wondering what's going on. And I'm not going to say this is the reason because I do not know that for sure. But, like, he wants to be there with his teammates. He wants to be on the court more than anything. That dude was going to always try to come back and play. And I think Andre Iguodala coming out later saying about his scenario coming back a little bit early or the reputation being out there that it was a bone bruise and where it was really a fracture. This is, I think, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah. The Andre one?
Yeah.
Was when he got hurt in the Houston series.
Exactly.
In the conference finals. And
I think that just confirmed a lot of thoughts. The Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant relationship is so incredible.
Memphis Grizzly, Andre Iguodala, by the way.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah. That's what happens when you go into Breakfast Club.
That was already done. I don't know if
Memphis, I agree.
I don't know if Memphis was done. Trading Andre was, I don't know when he went on the show. Trading Andre was something that he knew about, I believe, late last week. I don't know if he knew it was going to be Memphis,
yeah.
But I think he knew something was up.
Well, his story is one TBD, right?
Yeah. No, it's hard to imagine Jay Crowder, Kyle Korver, and Andre Iguodala are finishing the season as members of the Memphis Grizzlies. Let me ask the question another way. When did you know it was not the Knicks?
I never really knew. It wasn't the Knicks.
Did you ever really know it was not anyone? As far as you're concerned?
Okay. No. I tried to tell people this the other day. I'm like, this guy's still sitting there accessing all this information, still taking it all in. Now, I don't know what conversations Rich had with the Knicks. I don't know. I don't know what conversations he had with anybody. But what I do know is that there were still all the teams on the table and people were asking their opinions on all the teams. So for me, I thought everybody was still on the table. It seemed that way. I mean, and look, I think Kevin thought about how would 35 look in a New York Knicks uniform? How would 35 look in a Clippers uniform? Was that with Kawhi? What was going to go down? How would it look to obviously leaving $57 million on the table to go back to Golden State? Would the Golden State Warriors ever really be his team? You know, how was that going to be with Steph? I think all this stuff was stuff that he literally thought about. And I know Rich, for sure, built a whole deck, a whole book. It seemed like with 60 pages to go through all the different things that, you know, the pros and cons of all the scenarios.
So I wrote, the only thing I did during what was a very short finals 2 seasons ago, the sweep, Warriors sweeping the Cavs, the only project I wanted to go work on was I want to figure out what makes Kevin Durant tick as a human being. What does he want out of his career? I didn't talk to you. I should have talked to you. I didn't know you guys were tight at that point. But there's just so many interesting quotes in that story. And one of them was Rich Kleiman saying to me, I don't understand why people think we took the easy way out because every time anyone writes anything about Kevin, 80% of the comments are he's a snake, he's weak. I'm like, wow, he cares. Like they care about this. And I did come away feeling the sense of, including from talking to people at the Warriors who are incredibly cautious at that time to say anything publicly about Kevin. Normally a group that talks about their inner dynamics, not totally freely, but with a sense of like good storytelling. I came away with the distinct feeling, although Kevin wouldn't verbalize it like this, of him understanding this can never be my team. I can come here and I can get what I wanted, which is championships and validation and the chance to play with the best team on the grandest stage and assert my dominance over the league. But there's just going to be something I can't get. And Steve Nash told me, Steve and him worked together a lot in the off seasons. He told me after the first championship, he found Kevin strangely unfulfilled. And talking openly to Steve about how he thought a championship would do more. I just came away feeling like there's just something more in his basketball journey that cannot happen in Golden State. Is that too much? Is that too dramatic to say that?
No, I think you're 1,000% accurate. Even you win back-to-back finals MVP, and granted, Stephen Curry is a tremendous player, one of the best shooters we've ever seen to play the game. It was his team. And I think the fan base and everybody else let the world know it was his team. It always felt like there was this jockeying. Not saying Kevin wanted to be his team or Steph wanted to be his team, like they were on the same team together, but when they have a lot of outside influences always forcing it, and that's really hard to turn off, Zach. It's hard for us to turn that off. It's normal people. Yet alone every time your name comes up, people are berating you or saying something. Look, I can also tell you this, Zach. I saw so many stories out there that just were false.
Really?
Straight up false.
Like what?
So Kevin sold his home in the Bay. Kevin never bought a home in the Bay. Kevin rented a home in the Bay.
Don't even remember that being a thing.
Right? You don't.
Yeah.
But like his camp does because that's his life 24/7. So you have all these people that are saying different things. And all of a sudden he's like, that's not true at all. Why are people trying to change the narrative to make it look like I'm out? And that's almost like it creates sabotaging because then his teammates are saying, well, wait a second. Are you somewhere else you're going? Were you ever really here? There's a lot of miscommunication. You're dealing with the elite 1% of the world. And I think ego is always associated in all of this. It just seemed like it was challenging for everybody's ego to get on the same page.
And I think, ego.
Even though they were winning.
And also, I don't particularly think Steph is a big ego guy. Clay doesn't. Clay just wants to go out there and win. Draymond's a different kind of personality. But I also think there's something like a lot has been made of the Warriors should never have been able to get Kevin Durant. Like, you're not supposed to be able to get four top 15 to 20 players on the same team. There was this crazy one-time cap spike where the cap jumps by $25 million, and they get the best player in the world, the second best player in the world. Steve Kerr called him the second best player in the world. Like, you're just not supposed to be able to mix that talent.
Are you talking about the Lakers right now with Kawhi potentially? Oh, you're talking about Golden State.
When they got Durant. I don't pretend to know what the hell is going on with Kawhi. I don't know. I don't know if he knows that free agency is going on. I don't know what he's up to, what he's doing.
Scuba diving.
I think that there was a lot of sort of public reckoning with what is this team? How are we supposed to talk about this team? They're so much better than everybody else. It's kind of boring to talk about how they are relative to the league. We have to talk about how they fit and what the dynamics are. I think that discourse, and the net result of it, particularly the more clickbaity part of that discourse, is certainly pitting players against each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it was sort of baked into the construction of that team that we were going to talk about the inner dynamics of that team more than any part of the NBA.
That's another accurate point. When you dissect somebody's life, you can make something out of everything.
Yeah.
Every small move can be, he's not into you, he's into you. And that stuff builds up over the course of time, especially when you keep winning and people want to find ways to push you away from winning.
Your point about Brooklyn demonstrated proof of concept in a way that a lot of teams that are trying to open up cap space cannot do. The Knicks, there is no proof of concept for Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina and Dennis Smith Jr. But Spencer Dinwiddie's good. Caris LeVert is. If you told me Caris LeVert's going to make over under 2.5 All-Star teams in his career, I have to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Harris is good. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Warriors, all these teams would kill to have Joe Harris on their team. Torian Prince is pretty good. Rodions Kurucs is pretty good.
Garrett Temple.
Well, forget that. I'm talking about
the guys they had before.
The guys. Rarely do you get a young team with $70 million in cap space who can go to superstar players and say, the guys we already have are good and made the playoffs last year with D'Angelo Russell. Think about what you guys can do to them. The Knicks were with them. The Knicks couldn't do that. The Clippers can only kind of borderline do that right now. Now, I love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. I love some of their other pieces, but they can only kind of do that right now. The Nets, starting from nothing in 3 years, got to a point where they could say, here is a sustainable thing for you guys to come join.
Yes. And I would say this, the East just seems like it's up in the air. I mean, would you agree with me on that? I mean, Philly obviously made some monster moves. I think they had an incredible day. Milwaukee made some moves. Toronto's still waiting to see what's going on with Kawhi. The Celtics, Indiana. But, like, everything else kind of seems like it's just up in the air. Like, it's hard to pick. Philly would have to be the favorite, but you have to say that Brooklyn could be in the top five, even if Kevin Durant doesn't play. And if he comes back the following year, you would have to say Brooklyn's going to be the favorite.
And that's the year. Next year is like the honeymoon period, and it's the – please don't screw this team up, Kyrie, because Kevin is coming to play next year. You're the leader now. Just don't screw it up. Don't do whatever stuff. I think next year, Milwaukee, Philly, Toronto, if Kawhi stays, still clearly a top three in some order. And then it's Nets and Celtics, ironically, given
I think
their
Indiana's
history.
There, too. I think Nick McMillan's doing a hell of a job.
I haven't had time yet to sit back and, like, look at what's Indiana's roster looks like. I love the Brogdon fit for them. Those two big guys starting together, Sabonis and Turner, is going to be very interesting to see how well that works.
And then Victor Oladipo coming back. When did he come back, and if is he fully healthy?
Can we talk about the Knicks for a second?
Sure.
So, first of all,
where are you going to start?
I don't know. I really don't know.
That's the hard part.
I have so many friends who are Knicks fans, and I just can't even decide what the most depressing text message I got.
I'll start with one. It was disappointing, Zach, because I understand that every franchise has to pivot. But I think it was Bush League to come out with a statement that, hey, we were never going to give Kevin Durant.
Well, they didn't say that. There was no statement. It was reported that they were not prepared to offer Kevin Durant the max. Now,
thank you for the clarification.
I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure. Well, I mean, I'm sure that's true. But then Woj came on this morning and clarified they never were going to get to that point anyway because they were never going to get a meeting with them. So like, it's kind of like a who knows, and that wasn't going to be the deciding factor for Kevin, right?
But Zach, we all know how this stuff leaks out.
We do.
I didn't
get anything. I got nothing from anybody.
I hear you, but if you're Kevin Durant, you're sitting back there saying, "Oh, so if I didn't want to go to New York, you guys weren't gonna take me?" And I just think
I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah, and I think players see stuff like that, and players talk all the time. And it seems, regardless of where it came out or how it came out, like, prime example, we haven't had anything come out with Kawhi. There's certain organizations that kind of move that way because he's asked them to move that way, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
nothing.
Like, there is this premise out there that you can not have stuff get leaked if you don't want stuff to get leaked. Fair?
Yeah, those organizations. I know people with all three of the Kawhi organizations. I can't get anything out of them. I can't even – some of them are not returning calls or texts, which is fine. They got a lot of work to do. But, like, they might as well be underground.
So my thing is, if you don't want something to get out, you don't let it get out. You keep it in a very tight circle. That's how you operate. And I think that just – it was disappointing seeing that because, actually, I came in here today. I have an orange shirt on. I have blue pants because I actually think with some of the pieces, even though everybody else disagrees – like, that's how you build the franchise over the course of time.
I'm glad you said that because two things can be true at the same time.
Yes, I agree.
Two things can be true at the same time. Thing number one, the Knicks are okay.
I agree.
The Knicks are all right.
I agree.
Now, RJ Barrett better be good. And to me, Kevin Knox now becomes one of the most interesting players in the NBA because Dennis Smith, I think, tops out at just okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ntilikina has super-duper bust potential right now.
Kind of feel like he was built for the triangle anyway with – Phil
yeah.
Jackson.
Mitchell Robinson I like. We'll see what he is. But Knox is the player who, and now he's going to play a lot of three because they just signed, I think, 14 power forwards yesterday. But, like, they have the extra Dallas picks. We'll see how they are.
Yep.
I'm lukewarm on Dallas. They could be really good in a few years or next year. Excuse me. Or they could just be like a 45-win team with some downside. I don't know. And they have cap space. That's like good. That's called being a normal team. It's called being a normal basketball team. And for 15 years, all we've said is, can the Knicks just be normal? Like for a second.
Get back to even.
Can they just be normal? Can they not be like a toddler who sees a cookie and a cupcake and wants to eat all of them at the same time? That can be true. simultaneously, it can be true that yesterday was extremely embarrassing for them and that they should be embarrassed because your owner, who is a buffoon, went on national radio in March in the middle of the season.
Why?
And said, oh, we're going to have a great summer. These fans who are yelling at me to sell the team, they don't understand. Players and representatives, I can't really say who because it's tampering, but they're telling me what a great, everybody wants to come here. Everyone wants to, it's going to be a great summer. Dude, you have not built a competent team in 20 years. Just be quiet. Don't say that. Number two, you can leak whatever you want or do whatever. You could say, you can be completely reasonable. It is completely reasonable to say, you know what? An Achilles tear is really serious. Like, we may have to think a little bit about offering you the full max. Like, that's a totally reasonable position. The medical data suggests Kevin will never be the same again. I hope that's not true. Maybe it doesn't matter for him because he's essentially Dirk Nowitzki, blah, blah, blah. Totally reasonable. Okay. But your summer of dreams was not predicated solely on Kevin Durant or his health. It was also predicated on, we think we can get Kyrie Irving here. You didn't even have a chance in the end. You didn't have a chance. He didn't give you a hearing. Number two, you traded Kristaps Porzingis. You can tell me all you want about how we did it for cap space and flexibility and because he was unhappy here and it was going to reach a point of no return. Okay, so how about looking in the mirror? Why was it going to reach a point of no return? Do you think it was all the players' fault? Really? The last 20 years of New York Knicks franchise history would suggest to you that it's all the players' fault when things start to go badly. And number two, now you better hope against hope that he doesn't become a 25-10, eight-time All-Star for the Dallas Mavericks, because you can tell me all about the cap flexibility you got and all about the extra Mavericks picks you got. What are the chances any of that stuff is becoming better than a 25-10 All-Star for the Dallas Mavericks? You got it. You got work to do. So you cannot just pin this all on Kevin Durant's health. It's much – the failure and the vision and the failure was much bigger than Kevin Durant's
health. Can I tell you a caveat on top of that?
Sure.
Who gave Porzingis the nickname Unicorn?
Your guy, KD.
Do you not think that was one of the attractive pieces that he saw? It was like, wow.
Off for 3 years. For 3 years.
Wow, that we, this together, this is what this could be together potentially?
Now, for 3 years, I have joked about, on this podcast, about being one of only three or four people in the world sitting atop Julius Randle Hill, scrounging for berries and food and starting fires with sticks because everyone was out on Julius Randle and me and like three other guys weren't. And every time I would say, you know, he'd be an ideal fit for Kristaps Porzingis. Mm-hmm. Put Julius Randle with the big man who can shoot and protect the rim. Now they have Julius Randle and no Kristaps Porzingis. But still, caveat on top of caveat. I don't mind Julius Randle for 2+1. I don't even mind Bobby. I'm not really a Bobby Portis guy. But those are the kind. Now, Taj Gibson, I don't particularly know why. Veteran leadership, toughness, whatever. Reggie Bullock, fine. Shooting, Wayne Ellington. Like, the Portis and the Randle deals are the ones you should do because, A, you have a hole at the big man positions, and, B, they're big enough deals. They're short, but they're also big enough that the early bird rights you will have at the end are enough to re-sign them if they really pop. And both of those guys don't love either one of them, but they have some potential to really pop. Those are okay deals. This is what I'm saying. Like, it's not – if you clear away all the stuff, all the Knicksy stuff – it's not that bad, but you can't clear away all that stuff. You can't wish it away. It's part of the story.
The thing I do like about it, on top of what you just said, a lot of on top caveats here. They're going to play hard. Like with this lineup, Zach, this way, that's Julius Randle plays hard. Bobby Portis plays hard.
They play hard offense.
Like, so you don't sound happy with actually their execution on the court.
Well, like I said, they're not. I wouldn't be dying to have them on my team. And again, I was on Julius Randle Hill, but like I they're like,
it's a reset.
They have very elite talents on one end of the floor that I would like to, and I would like to see a little more on the other end. But that's fine. They're young players. That's life sometimes.
It's a reset year, and that's how they should have approached the whole thing, just in case expectations weren't met.
You know, I like anything that saves me time, and on some ticketing websites, just buying tickets and finding tickets became a hassle. There were so many websites that you wanted to go check to make sure you were getting the best deal that, boom, an hour would go by and you hadn't accomplished it yet. SeatGeek solves all those problems for you. It puts all those tickets into one place, one-stop shopping. You don't have to go anywhere else. A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews, and you can see why. It's super easy to use. It rates every deal based on price and location. Green dots are good. Red dots are less good. It has an interactive seat map so you can see everywhere where each seat is. It's very easy to use. I've used it before. I've gotten tickets to events. They help me get tickets to Hamilton. It's super easy. It streamlines everything. It should be your one-stop shopping for comedy shows, Broadway shows, sporting events, whatever. It will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is download the SeatGeek app. Use promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Again, that's promo code LOW. Bam, $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. Have you talked to Kevin since yesterday?
I just saw him.
Is he excited?
He is beyond excited. I literally just came from there here.
Really?
Yeah.
From wherever he is?
Yeah. It feels like home to him. It feels like home to him. And I will say this. There's something about who Kevin is, and I know he's misunderstood by a lot of different people. And look, we all go through ups and downs of life. That's how it works. But him and Kyrie have something special. They have a bond.
You're starting to scare me. Well, and the words "can't really explain it" really started to scare me a little bit.
You can't explain it. And from my perspective, I've always said this. Like, we did a thing here on Get Up, and I said I had Kyrie as a pro and Kyrie as a con. Because when Kyrie plays to the level and he leads, he's kind of exceptional. But this past year and other situations that we've seen, it can go volatile very, very quick. And their relationship is imperative to it working. And their connection with Sean Marks is going to be the thing that makes the whole thing work if it does work.
And I will say, they like the – now, the Nets had to do – all the stories you heard about the Nets doing some soul searching about whether – when it became uncertain whether Kevin was going to come there or not, whether they wanted to dive in with Kyrie solo. All that was true. One of the things they're counting on is Kenny Atkinson's style being a little better for Kyrie than Brad's. And now, I don't want to paint Brad Stevens as he's non-confrontational. He's calm. Brad will tell you to your face what the standards are, and he will take your ass out of the game. But Kenny just has a certain brashness. Like, if Kyrie starts going off on some passive-aggressive, I think Kenny will just get in his face and be like, dude, this is not like – you signed here. This is your
choice.
This
is yours, yes.
Get your together and play. Like, I don't want to hear any moping about the young players. Like, get in there and, like – and the Nets are sort of hoping, I think, that approach resonates with him. Plus the fact that it's Kyrie's choice to be here.
I think that's the biggest thing right there, that he chooses, this is where I want home to be. Like, I want to be here. I wasn't traded here. You know, whatever, you know, stuff came up with Brad and with Danny Ainge, and there's so many different stories that came out of Boston this past year about his leadership style. And look, I think some of the onus has to be a little bit on Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens as well, because that's what coaching, that's what mentorship is. But I will say this, when you own something, all that weight is on your shoulders now because you picked your spot. You weren't dealt there. And I think that forces Kyrie to think maybe a little bit more holistically about his connectivity to Kevin and how that's going to work.
Do
you think it's going to work or do you not think it's going to work?
Well, I mean, when are we going to see it, right? Like, you just got me excited. Like, I wanted to see it now.
Now.
We might not get to see it till 2021. I don't know. We'll see. I wrote in my story today, like, I've heard you hear, like, so I don't know if they're a great fit. They both need the ball. I think they're a great fit.
I think they're a great fit as well.
You put a point guard and a 7-footer who can both shoot, like, on a fundamental level. The fact that they are both elite shooters mean they're useful off the ball. B, they're a pick and roll combination it's just what we saw with Kyrie and LeBron and Steph and KD, which was, I think, underutilized. You know, they had in Golden State such a wealth of talent that they could underutilize their best plays and it didn't matter. But, like, you can't switch it, can't go under. You know, it's like, I think they're a nice fit.
Can I read you an interesting stat that one of my researchers sent me?
Absolutely.
It just says that, research shows that players coming back from an Achilles injury see their production decline about 8%. Durant was 14th in efficiency last season, Stephen Curry territory. An 8% decline would drop him to 24th. That's Paul George territory. That's still ahead of players such as Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin, and Jimmy Butler. I think that's somewhat interesting from a research analytics perspective.
Well, and Jonathan Sharks, my friend at The Ringer today, made a comparison that I meant to make in my column last night, but I made it indirectly.
Because you haven't slept.
Yeah. Well, there's something of, like, when you talk about, you know, people who are extremely tall and shoot very well tend to age well, and they tend to be elite pick and roll screeners for a long time.
Dirk
is the name that comes up. And, like, that, I think, how good Dirk was for so long with athleticism that was limited even compared to what Kevin is going to be in the worst case scenario is very encouraging. Let's talk – before I let you go, Tim Bontemps is going to come in from the bullpen and relieve you in a little bit. I just We got to talk about Philly.
Oh, yeah.
This is, assuming this deal gets done, which everyone is optimistic it's going to be.
Wait, can I tell you a little bit of breaking news?
Yes. Sure.
It has nothing to do with actually a free agent, but.
Well, that's disappointing.
I am going to potentially get a little sit down with Markelle Fultz, which I really look forward to.
When? Where?
We're going to work it out right after free agency, after this week. Talk to his agent.
Can you wheel me in like a...
I cannot yet. Because I don't want to do it.
No, just like, you know how they wheel the snack cart in?
Yeah.
I'll like hide underneath this, like the tablecloth.
I'll bring you in with me.
I'll feed you some questions.
Yeah. I've known Raymond forever. And, I've always loved who Markelle is. I think we're going to try to dig a little bit deep and see what's out there. See what's really going on.
You really got to dig.
Yes, you do.
So Philly had Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris and JJ Redick as free agents. 3/5 of what they claimed was the best starting lineup in the NBA with some justification. JJ Redick now plays for the Pelicans, who, by the way, have like 13 good NBA players potentially.
I'm a Pelicans fan.
It's going to be.
I'm going to go watch games.
It's going to be really interesting. Like, they just got Derek Favors. Like, randomly, let's just add Derek Favors. He's going to be our starting center, maybe.
How long ago was it when David Griffin came into the mix? Like 2 months ago?
I think 4 days ago. And Jimmy Butler is going to play for the Miami Heat, presumably. Assuming this gets done. In their place comes Josh Richardson as part of the sign and trade with Miami and Al Horford as Philly goes absolutely all in on size to a degree that wasn't even true before this.
Hmm.
They are now the biggest team I can remember from 1 to 5 in recent NBA history. With Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid, and who am I forgetting?
Again, Josh Richardson.
No, I got him. Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, Al Horford. Simmons. I got everyone. Ben Simmons.
That's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point. Isn't that funny? Of all the guys, that's the guy that you forgot? I mean, I watched all this last night, Zach, and I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, oh, okay, Al Horford goes from villain to now hero. The one guy that can stop Joel Embiid is now a teammate. Okay, I like Josh Richardson a lot. I like the way he plays. He brings that dog mentality. You lose some shooting, but this means that Elton Brand believes that Ben Simmons can lead this team to a championship.
Breaking news. Breaking news has just happened.
What do we got?
The New York Knicks have signed Elfrid Payton, 2 years, $16 million. Hate the money.
But like it.
Don't think the player is going to be good. But again, young, 2 years, early bird number. Don't mind it. Go ahead, Knicks. Okay. Al Horford, Ben Simmons, blah, blah, blah. So Al Horford becomes now from villain to hero in Philly.
I love when your brain goes different places and bring it back together. It's incredible.
I can't be away from I went to the bathroom without my phone like half an hour ago, and I was like, this is a disaster. I got to pee really fast and get out of here.
Every answer, I just got to give context to the viewer. Every answer I'm giving, I'm seeing Zach go down to his phone. I'm seeing him stare. There's a lot of movement going on right now during free agency. Stressful times.
Anyway, so continue about this.
Didn't you hear me where I said, this means that Ben Simmons is going to lead you to a world championship. That's what you're betting on.
Well, it is in the aggregate. I don't mind what Philly did yesterday. If you think of Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler as almost one big trade, okay? Mm-hmm. They only traded for Jimmy directly, Covington and Saric. That got them Jimmy. So if you say we traded Covington and Saric for Josh Richardson and the cap flexibility to sign Al Horford, that's fine. Like, you're all in on that. Josh Richardson is really good. He was arguably the Miami's best player.
Yep.
He's a good 3-point shooter, not a great one, but 39% catch and shoot the last 2 years, which is what he will be shooting, the kind of shots he will be shooting. I just think the most interesting part of the deal is what you just said. When the going got tough in the playoffs, Philly stuck Ben Simmons in the dunker spot under the rim and said, get out of the way.
Averaged 13 points in the playoffs.
You're not ready for this. Jimmy Butler, you're the point guard. Take us home.
Who's your closer now? And you're saying that Ben Simmons is going to be
the
closer.
Not only that, who's creating off the dribble? Now, you can tell me they have decent shooting. Horford's a decent shooter. Horford's not like Dirk. People are making Horford's like 36% career on wide open attempts.
And his numbers did drop off this year as opposed to the last year.
He's fine. Tobias, I think, the other guy that there's more pressure on is Tobias.
$109 million is fine.
No. There's pressure on Tobias now. Tobias now has to do some of this off the dribble stuff is going to fall to him.
Yep.
But he's a below average passer, I think, for his his scoring burden, let's say. So and you can tell me like they have better playmaking at the four with Horford and this and that. Like, I do think that who is creating offense off the dribble is a fair question to ask. Now, and you can post Embiid and all this. Like, there are other ways to do it. I get it. They've been doing the other ways to do it for a couple of years now. But I think that's a fair question to ask, and the most interesting one that results from these transactions.
I just really worry about – look, I understand defensively they could be a little bit different too. You got Zaire Smith and Matisse Thybulle too.
They're going to start four dudes who could make an all-defense team.
It's ridiculous. Now, that's how they're going to win.
Now, Tobias guarding threes more scares me a little bit, but Brett is smart about juggling the matchups. Like, they'll hide Joel Embiid on a bad power forward and let Al guard centers. Like, they'll play around, but the bottom line is Tobias is going to have to guard wings, and that makes me a little bit nervous. Not like huge, because he's big and he can make up for some of his speed with somebody like, you know, but defensively they have a chance to be special.
And then I would say this, even Milwaukee, I understand that you're going to sign Chris Middleton. I understand that you're going to – now you have the Lopez brothers on the same team. You lose Malcolm Brogdon. There's no way they can keep Malcolm Brogdon as well.
But, I mean, there was a way.
But it's crazy, though, that Indiana got Brogdon. And I know you're still not on Indiana yet, but I'm starting to go down the little Indiana. They're going to be okay. They're going to be okay. No, losing Bogdanović really hurts because I think he's special. And by the way, when we get to the West, Utah.
Ooh,
oh, my God.
Big summer for
the Jazz. I cannot wait to watch Utah.
If they can –
Snyder, my boy – he left Duke 1 year before I got there.
Ah.
I'm stoked to see that team. But I think Indiana's going to be okay. I mean, I like Malcolm Brogdon, but they can get Victor Oladipo back. I like Sabonis. I like Turner. I like their style. Losing Thaddeus Young hurts, but they'll be okay. You're not excited.
I am excited. Okay. I like Indiana. Excited. I liked Indiana.
They got TJ Warren, Jeremy Lamb. You have pieces?
Jeremy Lamb was a really good signing for them for, I think, 10 a year.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's great value. TJ Warren, they stole. Like, they're
in
the
draft,
good.
Yeah.
But we were talking about Philly.
How do you read that on your notebook?
It's my writing.
Oh, my good. Zach, what is that?
You can read your writing. I can read my writing.
Look how legible this is.
Well, look, good for you. Congratulations. You get a freaking A in penmanship. I don't. My wife does laugh at me because when we write, like when after I thank you cards, I really take my time. And she's like, that's the best you can do? Like, you actually try.
So your wife confirms the same thought I have.
Oh, no, it's like my, like, put in an effort handwriting is embarrassing. But this is my, like, I'm just writing stuff down real fast so I can, but like when I sit down, I'm like, I'm really taking my time. I have a firm grip on the pen. I want this mother of this child whose birthday party I'm going to be able to read this card.
I know, because you got a little bit defensive very quickly about it.
It's an ongoing issue.
Okay. All right.
Philly has some depth to sort out. I do love Al is back up five now because of the way they stagger their minutes. All those minutes where they just got destroyed when Embiid was on the bench are now going to be Al Horford at the 5 minutes, which is a huge upgrade. But offensively, I think, look, they on raw talent, they're going to be, I don't know where they ranked offensively this year, I think like 11th. On raw talent, they should be around there. But in the playoffs, when things get hard, I'm curious to see how they're going to create offense. But that said, there is value. I think they proved it this year in just being huge and physical and a giant pain in the ass to play against because Toronto wanted no part of those dudes.
Kawhi Leonard goes back to Toronto. They're the favorite in the East, correct?
Yeah, you have to give them. You have to give them that
favorite.
But
if
I think
Kawhi does not go back, Philly. Philly or Milwaukee? I still like Milwaukee.
I want to say Milwaukee because I feel like I'm a broken record from a year ago. I understand how Milwaukee is going to play.
Yes.
They have a model that works, but they can dismiss Brogdon if they want. It's like, oh, we can make up for Brogdon's production. George Hill was great in the playoffs. Giannis will get better, blah, blah, blah. Like, Brogdon was at times their second best player in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Are we going to see Eric Bledsoe?
I was texting someone in the league today about this, how much they're going to miss Brogdon or not, the Bucks. And I said, you know, the first thing we have to figure out is Eric Bledsoe just going to become a sub-replacement level player in the playoffs every year? Because if that's the case, they're going to miss Malcolm Brogdon a lot.
Like, was it $70 million that he signed for?
Eric Bledsoe, yeah, 4 years, $70 million.
$70 million.
He's getting paid less than Malcolm Brogdon, which I think is a great job by Malcolm Brogdon's agents.
I agree.
Turning down, unclear if it was offered or not, but the the Josh Richardson $12 million year kind of extension mm-hmm. at the beginning of the season, and they got 20.
But I got to be frank with you. It was hard. And I love Eric Bledsoe. But I've known him since he was a freshman at Kentucky before he left. It was hard watching him play in the playoffs. I struggled for him. You ever watch those movies where you get really nervous for somebody because you know something bad is going to happen? I felt that way watching EB play in the playoffs. And that's a – but I do think Dante DiVincenzo, if he can come back off that injury from last year, that's a talented kid too. That may be able to relieve some of that to a degree.
Fair. I mean, they liked him in the draft.
Talented kid.
They have other guys like DJ Wilson fell out of their Agreed. Playoff yep. rotation. Yeah, I thought he had a very nice regular season for them. But there's something about the raw talent and physicality and size of the Sixers that I think translates better to a slowdown playoff game than what the Bucks have. Like, if the Bucks and the Sixers had played this year, I think I might have given a teensy edge to the Sixers in that series to wear them down by the end.
So the shift is here. We went from the space and place, like right – no, I didn't say that.
Pace and space.
It's been a long night. Pace
it's
and
been
space.
A long night.
Three-point shooting to now we're reverting back to old-school basketball. Zach?
Maybe. It just depends on your talent, right? I mean, they're going all in on that kind of talent, and they have shooting. And in I mean, it's interesting, though, like the pace part of it. Ben Simmons wants to play at one pace, and Joel Embiid wants to play at another pace.
Agreed.
And there are ways to balance that out, right? Like Ben can be opportunistic, and Joel can trail for threes, and this and that. But like that's a fundamental dichotomy of their team that is going to be unresolved for as long as those guys play together.
I just want Al Horford to trail for threes. I'm kind of tired of Joel Embiid trailing for threes.
He has taken lots of threes.
Lots
in some
of
games.
Threes.
Well, okay. Well, let's be frank. Joel Embiid, for them to reach the next level, Joel Embiid has to get in shape. He has to get in shape. And one of the benefits of the Horford thing, again, is that they won't – I think they overplayed Joel a little bit this year, and they will mm-hmm. not have to do that this coming year. He can play 30 minutes a game or whatever the magic number is for X amount of games because they have a reliable starting center.
I see that team, and I think they have a chance to be great. I'm really unsure about Joel's health. I really don't know if he can stay healthy throughout the course of an entire year. I worry about that with him. Talent speaks for itself, but
I think everybody does. I mean, they just remain endlessly fascinating. They can't stay uninteresting for more than a month. They break up their team. They have some sort of scandal. They have a guy you're going to sit down with who forgot how to shoot and may or may not play for the Magic next year. I mean, I saw John Hammond, I think, had some quote about how we're not sure when he's going to play again. I'm like, all right.
But his body fat is great. That's what the rest of the quote said.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, his body fat is tremendous. Yeah. He lost you at – he looks great.
He lost me at we're not sure when he's going to play. Like, he's going to be a male model, that's awesome that his body fat looks great. He's a basketball player. I don't mean to make light of it. I think there are some serious issues going on there.
No, I understand that.
All right.
Do you like the Celtic move?
To get Kemba?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. We'll see how they structure it, right? Like, there's going to be all these sign and trades with Terry Rozier going to Charlotte. I don't know what Charlotte is doing.
Nobody knows what Charlotte is doing.
I just don't understand anything that's happening there. I feel bad for their fans. It's just awful. And I don't want to talk about it. I have not seen an alternative for Boston's offseason that is better than using Kemba all their cap space and or just signing signing and trading, whatever it's going to end up be.
Just crazy how the league, you can go from 1 year, being projected to be the team that wins a world championship to the next. How are they going to finish? Fourth,
well,
fifth in the East?
That's one of the lessons that I have eaten crow on this podcast many times now. I was, and lots of us were, overly optimistic about Boston's core.
I picked them to win it
last year. But I didn't pick them to win it, although I picked them to get to the finals. But I wrote in a column, like, they are potentially set up here to be good for 10 years. And I think that was true at the time. I think it was when Kyrie Irving said, if you'll have me, I'm going to resign here. I don't think a lot of people would have disagreed with that statement. Mm. But the lesson that the league keeps teaching us is that no one is set up to be good for 10 years. The Warriors couldn't keep this dynasty together for more than three, the KD version. These teams just have a really short shelf life, and it's hard to keep a bunch of great players together. It's hard to stay healthy. It's hard to – nothing remains stable anymore for that long. And that's like – I mean, D'Angelo Russell is on the Warriors now. Like, Andre Iguodala is gone. Kevin Durant's gone. And, like, this is just sort of what the Warriors look like. It's a very strange world. Like that. The Warriors went from no one is going to challenge this team until they're all 34 years old, unless they have to trade one of these guys because of the luxury tax, to what? D'Angelo Russell's on their team. What's happening? Are they fifth in the West? Seventh? Fourth? Like,
I don't even know who else is on their team, because it doesn't look like Kevon Looney's going to stay there.
Well, they've got some issues to sort out with the hard cap
and all
this stuff. And Woj just reported now that they gave up a first-round pick to Brooklyn in what appears to be, according to Woj's reporting, a double sign-and-trade with KD and D'Lo being signed and traded for each other. And they gave up a first-round pick to dump Andre Iguodala on the Grizzlies, which, by the way, where were the Knicks on that?
Yeah.
It's a good pick that they gave up, too, 2024. Like, who knows how the Warriors are going to be in 2024? So two first-round picks out the door to get D'Angelo Russell on your team. That's an interesting – I'm going to write about a little bit about the Warriors. That's an interesting move. Why don't you go get ready for Get Up? Go get ready for Get Up. Tim Bontemps is going to come in here in a second, and we're going to talk about, I guess, the Blazers and the Heat and whatever the hell else is going on. Jay, well, anything else you want to say about KD? Anything you didn't think we covered about yesterday or about his priorities or anything like that?
Always more to come, Zach. More. That means I have to come back on the podcast.
You do? I'm thrilled to have you on.
Positioning.
And I was telling Bill Duffy, who we both know, I was like, Jay Will is really good at this, and
it's
super fun to work with him. So I'm really – thank you for making a little time. I know we're all busy.
You got it. Thank you.
Visit ebay.com/ESPN to see a long list of amazing one-of-a-kind experiences like this one. The NBA experience at Disney Springs, a dream come true for any NBA fan anywhere, and especially for Low Post listeners. All proceeds benefit the V Foundation for Cancer Research, and like the great Jimmy V once said, we'll never give up in the fight against cancer. Relieving Jay Williams, like, who's your relief pitcher, like doppelganger? Rob Nen?
I have no idea. Sure.
John Frank? Are you lefty or righty?
John, I'm not a lefty, but from a family of Met fans, John Franco is as good a choice as any.
I couldn't stand watching John Franco. It made me break out.
I didn't have any strong opinions on him either way. I have a John Franco signed ball at home. Somewhere.
I didn't trust him.
Yeah?
Didn't trust him. Tim Bontemps, how are you?
I'm good. I was on my debut appearance on the Low Post was 3 years and 363 days ago. Actually, 4 years and 363 days ago. July 3rd, 2014.
I've had a podcast that long?
Yeah. July 3rd. I looked it up before I came in here. July 3rd, 2014, in the wake of Jason Kidd pulling a coup in Brooklyn, going to Milwaukee, and the Nets not having any control of their own picks for the next 4 years and seemingly being adrift. And now they have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
They have drifted.
I know we're talking about other things. It's just kind of remarkable how much things have changed.
They have drifted into, I don't know, what's a good thing to drift into? The Blue Lagoon? Is the Blue Lagoon good? I never actually saw the Blue Lagoon.
I mean, something. They've drifted into a pretty amazing situation given where they were. We're talking about other things, but I just figured I'd bring that up because it is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, Jay Will and I just had a long talk about KD and Kyrie and all the machinations and all that. Let's talk about Yeah, let's hit some breaking news because right before I came in here, Portland traded Maurice Harkless and Myers Leonard to the Heat for Hassan Whiteside.
Portland getting weird.
It's essentially a wash contractually. All those guys are on expiring contracts.
Right. Portland takes on a little bit of money, right?
Yeah. But
maybe that helps Miami get this Jimmy Butler trade done. But Portland also has no power forwards now. This roster is bizarre.
Well, they would dispute that because I think what they would say was, well, we can play Jake Lehman up. We have all these wings now.
Sure.
So we'll just play small.
Sure.
And I think we'll see Collins some at the
4. I was going to say Collins maybe starts at the 4.
But I agree
with you. I don't even mean that it's bad. It's just very interesting. They have a million wings, and now they have three centers.
You know who else has played some small ball foul forward in his career?
No.
The LeBron stopper, my boy Mario Hezonja.
Oh, that's right. They signed Hezonja. Well, he actually will play minutes for them at the 4.
That sentence never ends well for a team. Mario Hezonja.
Hey, listen, I'm on with the leader. We're going to talk about another Croatian later, but Hezonja, part of the Croatian mafia for you. I mean that for a minimum signing, I thought that was fine. And look, I think they're going to be really interesting. But it's just I feel like they still have more moves to make.
They have certainly sacrificed the big wing factor
right.
with Harkless and Aminu.
Picking Hood over Aminu, it seems like, because Aminu got the mid-level. Hood basically got the mid-level to stay.
And you'd like a little size on the wing. You'd like the prototypical guy, I don't feel completely naked when he's guarding LeBron guy.
Right.
But every year Portland gets to the playoffs, And every year Aminu and Harkless miss shots.
Right.
And every year nobody guards them. And every year Portland has to be like, you know, we just gotta take them out of the game. We gotta go smaller. We gotta put Hood in. We gotta put Seth Curry in.
Well, and to be
in.
Fair, how many times have we said, are the Blazers just gonna run it back with the same thing, right? Over and over and over again. Well, this is not the same thing. This is very different. I would imagine Anthony Simons might get a chance to play.
They love Anthony Simons.
They like him a lot. Maybe Nasir Little, their rookie out of UNC, gets a chance to play.
And like Bazemore. Like, they're loaded
right,
with wings.
Right, that's right.
Now.
They have Bazemore, who's another wing. I mean, they can play a lot of wings. It's just, they're going to be really interesting.
And Whiteside.
Didn't they want to go after Whiteside when he signed that contract in 2016?
This is all an everything Portland is doing is an exchange of 2016.
Right, exchange of 2016 contracts.
Evan Turner out, Kent Bazemore in, Alan Crabb out, Hassan Whiteside, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless. It's all so Hassan Whiteside was the number one target,
right?
And well, maybe Dwight Howard. I can't remember. They wanted a center.
Right, they were going after Parsons and Dwight and Whiteside.
And now they have Whiteside in the last year of his deal. And look, Whiteside is not as good as his numbers.
No.
He chases every potential block shot like a cat chasing birds.
Right.
And leaves the defensive glass, unpatrolled. He's going to sulk. He wants to shoot jumpers, all this, but like if Enes Kanter can hold the fort for them,
mm-hmm.
Hassan Whiteside can hold the fort
for sure.
He can play Terry Stotts' defensive scheme.
Right. That's usually pretty conservative, which should help. Right. Doesn't have to move around too much. Which will help him.
If you put him with guards who can break down the defense, he'll get a lot of offensive rebounds and lobs and putbacks.
Going to say Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum running some pick and rolls with him driving, you know, rolling to the rim. If he's willing to roll to the rim, should be a pretty nice
setup. I was
going to say,
one thing that would serve him well is to actually set screens.
Yeah.
Like, underrated Yusuf Nurkic thing is the dude will level you picks.
And Hassan is huge. If he'll set a screen, he can level a guy.
Hassan Whiteside don't want to level people. He's got to start leveling people.
That's
right. They need that daylight to function.
That's right.
So, look, I don't love Hassan Whiteside. I can talk myself into this for Portland.
Especially with Nurkic hurt. I mean, this gives them a lot of insurance. We don't know when Nurkic is going to be healthy, right? Now they have a large expiring. Say Nurkic comes back in, you know, December, January. Then maybe they can flip Whiteside for something else, right? Somebody has a longer-term deal they want to get off of, or if they want to get a four.
Does it rhyme with Blevin Cove?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Kevin would be an interesting fit there, right? You know, look, it gives them options. So I like it. I like it for them. I think it's an interesting move.
I think it is
it
one
initially
of the-
surprised me because, again, they have kind of a funky roster, but the more I've thought about it, I do think it's a pretty nice move for them.
I think it's going to be the kind of move that I'm and some of us on this side of the desk are going to be a little less enthusiastic about than some fans who haven't watched Hassan Whiteside play that much but just see the highlights
right. And
see the stats.
Right.
I don't think this is the all-in move for Portland. I think this is a potentially neutral, maybe a little incremental move, totally probably no harm, no foul.
Right.
Like despite Myers Leonard having one explosive game in the playoffs,
right.
which he does every year,
yep.
don't particularly care about the cost going out. So no harm, no foul, probably incremental improvement. I don't think this is like Portland's entering the arms race with Utah right. and the Lakers and whoever gets Kawhi and this, that, and the other thing.
But if this becomes Kevin Love in February, say, and that's just total speculation, but like if they could turn him into the kind of piece they don't have right now with a pick or something, right? They have a bunch of young guys. Like then, all right, maybe then that is where they get to. Because I'm with you. I think if they really – and. We're going to get into it. I think the West is obviously wide open.
Woo.
As long as Kawhi, you know, even if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, maybe, but especially if he doesn't. And they've got to feel like they got a shot. And, you know, I mean, this could be an incremental move that gets them somewhere else if something else down the line pops up.
Now, if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, I think we'd see Rondo back. I think you'd see KCP back.
Well, they just signed. Do you think KCP is only going to get the minimum? I guess maybe.
Room exception.
Yeah, that's true. But they also need a center.
They need nine other players.
I was going to say it appears like they might have. I saw somewhere earlier that it sounded like Troy Daniels might sign with them.
I got a tweet alert about that, and I just haven't looked at it because I'm trying to be a diligent.
I don't know if it's official or not, but that would be the kind of move that would make a lot of sense for them to get him on a minimum, a really good shooter. Like they need as much shooting as they can. They just need guys who will play. So you know, a minimum deal for him would make a lot of sense.
But depth aside. If you have LeBron and Kawhi and AD,
you have three of the best six players in the league.
You are going to inflict a world of hurt on the rest of the NBA.
You're going to be pretty damn good.
I don't care if you have to play 6 minutes a game, Tim. You're right. Pretty tall. You can.
I could at least get
box
in the way.
Some people out.
That's right. I could at least throw my body around and get in the way.
But Portland is. I mean, you just named like if Simons and Little are going to play. I mean, Lehman started for them for part of last season.
He very well might be starting at the four for them right now.
Like they're super,
they don't start Zach Collins.
They're super deep, and the playoffs are different than the regular season. But part of what you want to do in the regular season is not overtax any of your players, so that when you get to the playoffs, everyone feels as good as you can feel in game 95 of the season.
Well, and that was the big thing about getting Ronnie Hood back, right? Because in theory, he gives them that other score that they need. So they don't have to necessarily ride Dame and CJ all the time as hard as possible. Because if Rodney Hood's giving you 15 points a game as your third scorer and your first scorer off the bench, all right, then maybe you can pull back the reins on those guys a little bit and help have them be as fresh as possible so they're not in the playoffs looking completely gassed in the, you know, the Western Conference Finals like they did at times this year.
Ironically, and I'm not sure, again, so much has happened in the last 48 hours that I'm still digesting everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you mean like half the league signing in 12 hours is not a lot?
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
I thought we might get through last night before the D'Angelo stuff broke. Like when we got to midnight Eastern,
right?
I thought, okay,
whew. Right. Maybe now we'll get a chance to catch our breath till the morning.
Nope, definitely not.
definitely not.
Ironically, and again, for reasons I'm not quite sure I make any sense, the power forward vacuum that I'm more nervous about is Utah.
Yeah.
More nervous than Portland. I love what Utah's done. So their starting line is going to be Conley, Mitchell, Ingles, Bogdanović,
yep.
Gobert.
Yep.
Off the bench, Royce O'Neal and Dante Exum at the wing. Ed Davis is a backup center.
Yep.
I'm sure I'm forgetting.
That's their main eight guys.
Niang will get some time as a backup for.
He can shoot a little bit. Yeah.
And I'm going to look up their roster now because I'm sure. I think they're going to waive Neto. I think that was just reported.
Right.
To get under.
To make whatever, the Conley deal happen.
Yeah. To get whatever they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look up their who else they have now because I'm sure we're forgetting someone. I mean that's
to vamp for you a bit though. I mean they are a little small on the wing. You know, if you're playing Boyan and Joe Ingles essentially as your 3-4, you know, you are a little light in the pants there at power forward. But if you look around the league, how many teams are really playing a huge guy at that spot? Not that many teams, right? And when you do have Rudy Gobert at the rim, you can probably sacrifice a little bit of size knowing that you've got this Goliath at the rim to kind of clean things up. And I'm sure that's what Utah is thinking because, again, you know, we watched the last 2 years. Utah got in the playoffs and their offense – really kind of got stuck in the mud. And it was Donovan Mitchell running into a wall, and they didn't have enough scorers around him and guys who could make plays. Now you add Mike Conley, you add Bojan Bogdanović, two really good shooters, two guys who can put the ball on the floor and make a play. You can run a pick and roll with all four of those guys now. They just have a ton of options.
They're going to be a very dynamic offensive team. I do think there's something in the playoffs of, like, Ingles' limitations are a little more pronounced in the playoffs. Royce O'Neal's limitations are a little more pronounced in the playoffs.
Yep.
Even Gobert's, I think, are a little bit more pronounced
sure.
in the playoffs. So I'm high on Utah. I do think they have a chance to make the finals. I think they're in that, they've gotten themselves in that conversation.
They're 100% in the mix to be the best team in the West for sure.
I'm like 5 to 10% lower on them than people seem to be. There's just a little element of athleticism. And just kind of like juice and size, just like a little like power and athleticism. There's like a little element of that that's missing for me.
You'd feel a lot better about that team if they had Jay Crowder still, right? Or just one more guy like that. Just another guy at another four they could plug in there that feels like a four size. Maybe even bigger than Jay Crowder.
Like Nikola Mirotic.
Well, yeah. But
by the way, so much stuff happened that Darren Collison retired to be a Jehovah's Witness and Nikola Mirotic went to Europe.
Went to Europe. I know.
By the way, I heard his wife wanted to go back to Europe.
Right.
Look, I don't know what the money difference is, but they take care of your taxes and they take care of your housing.
Living in Barcelona,
you get to live
good.
In Barcelona and eat tapas on the beach and drink
good.
Wine. My wife, if she gets wind of that, she's
going to
be like,
"You'll be going to write for whatever the is Marca the one in Barcelona."
I have
no idea. AS is the Madrid site. Maybe
she
Marca,
doesn't listen to this
Marca
podcast, so she's not going to get wind of this. Do not alert her to what Nikola Mirotic did.
Well, let me ask you in a vacuum. So do you think that getting Bogdanović is better?
First of all, we've got. I like that you're going with the itch. We've got. You're not Simmons, who's going to call him Bogdanović, but we got to get the "an" out of you. Bogdanović. It's Bogdanović. Bogdanović.
Yeah, I know. I covered him. Sorry. I thought I was saying it right.
You're doing all right.
I appreciate it. Boyan would get mad at me because I'm friendly with him. I covered him in Brooklyn, so I love him.
He's made himself one hell of a player.
Awesome. But who do you think is the better player? Like, just in a vacuum, if Utah could have chose one guy, who would you rather have?
I think Bogdanović is a better basketball player. Yeah. Dude. It's interesting, you know, for all the hype.
I think he's better, but to your point, they may have been a little better off with Mirotić, but still, I think Bogdanović has proven in the playoffs, Bogdanović, I should say, he's proven in the playoffs to be a guy who, and for Croatia too, he's a guy who will show up in big games and not be afraid to make shots and make plays. And, you know, Nikola Mirotić is a really nice player, but he also really struggled in the Eastern Conference Finals to the point where he was benched against Toronto. So, you know, you have to choose at some point, but I really like Utah. Like right now, they're the number one team in the West for me. Now, obviously, we're pretending Kawhi doesn't exist. Like, yeah. We got asked this morning, who do you pick in each side? And I picked Philly and Milwaukee, and I picked Utah and Houston because, again, we don't know where Kawhi is yet. But I really like this Utah team. I think they're really good.
I'm glad you brought up Houston. And by the way, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Not to take people too far behind the scenes, this morning they were asking us, like, who are you picking? And six, seven different teams came up, Denver, Utah, the Lakers, obviously, the Clippers, blah, blah, blah. Nobody talked about Houston. And I know Houston has been rumored to be doing 17 different things, but this is a team that still has a lot of really good players, and they seemingly are all sticking around. So,
and they know how to play together. They may not, or they know how to play together but apart, whatever the right phraseology is.
Right.
They know what to do.
That's right.
When James Harden takes 19 dribbles, they know what to do.
That's right. Of all these teams, they don't have to figure anything out, at least as of now. Now, maybe they change things, but as of now, they're filling in the gaps. They've signed Austin Rivers. They brought Daniel House back. They seem to be bringing the band back. And I think we've seen in the past, continuity tends to work out well for teams.
I agree. They're being totally overlooked. Like there's no reason that they shouldn't be in the handful of top three or four teams in the West when you're talking about this conversation. But Utah's in there. Denver, I think the Murray.
Were you a little surprised that they got that done immediately? Just because of how much cap space it eats up next summer?
I think they've just decided next summer's class stinks. We're not going to get people here.
Right.
Millsap is going to go probably after this year. So that is a slot that will open up. But I was surprised. I was surprised at the number. To me, to come out of the gate and give Jamal Murray the max,
right,
is a whoa moment. Because I think Jamal Murray's good.
I mean, he hasn't made an All-Star team yet. He's been inconsistent.
He's like 22.
I'm not knocking him. I think he's really, really good. And like, to me, if Denver is going to be a team that makes the NBA Finals, in my opinion, he needs to become their best player. And I think he's capable of becoming their best player. But he has to take, to me, another step or two to get there. So it's interesting they come out and give him a 5-year max is a pretty huge statement of like, hey, we believe you can be this kind of player. I don't know if that's what you were getting to, but that was what it said to me.
Well, and clearly Denver has tried to create value by doing right by its players.
Yep.
To the point that they wouldn't trade Jameer Nelson to a crappy team.
That's right.
And things like that. And they're sending a signal here. We believe in you. You're one of us. The market's going to see that. But that's one where I think, I mean, there are max play, like Jamal Murray right now is not someone you look at on their rookie deal and be like, oh, it's a max. So it's a 6:01 right. PM max. Like that's a one.
People
like,
thought that about Ben Simmons. People weren't talking about that with Jamal
Murray.
Well,
I think that's going to happen. I think the Ben Simmons one is more about the all NBA language.
But I'm agreeing with you. What I'm saying is, people, if you would have said what player from the 2015 draft class was going to sign, or 16 draft class, was going to sign a max contract extension on July 1st, you would have said Ben Simmons. You wouldn't have thought Jamal Murray was going to be that guy. It's just very fascinating that they did it.
That's one where if you tell me, you know what, we're going to take this to restricted free agency next summer, see how it goes.
Right.
Take advantage of your cap hold that's $10 to $12 million or whatever it is, smaller than
right.
Than this extension. And, you know, maybe try to get you back below the max. Like, that's one I can live with that. Like, yep. Jamal Murray hasn't earned the status of, I have to do everything I can to please him. He's my
right.
franchise player. Nikola Jokic is the franchise player. They already took care of him. But they're going to be good next year. They're super high on Porter. and what he can do. I think a Wancho resurrection after what was a lost season for him.
A lot of people are talking about Zion Williamson versus RJ Barrett on Friday, but I'm pretty confident a ton of NBA people are going to be as or more interested in the game. I think before that, which is the, I think Nuggets Lakers, but it should be Michael Porter's professional debut. And I'm very, very curious to see what that guy looks like after basically 2 years not playing.
Everything I've heard is he's going to have to play next year. He's going to play himself onto the floor, and we have to construct our team knowing that this guy is too talented to not be on the floor in our regular
rotation. Look, to go back to your point about Millsap, right? He's going to be a four. Like that sets up nicely. If he can step in a year and be their four, then that, you know, allows him to shift things around a little bit.
They're my dream Bradley Beal team. If Bradley Beal ever became
Bradley
available,
Beal on that team would be pretty
you
amazing.
Could throw Gary Harris and some stuff and not Jamal Murray and get Bradley Beal. But Bradley Beal, no one thinks he's on the market right now.
That would be pretty amazing.
Give me team. 1 minute. Give me Tim Bontemps 1 minute on the Sixers because I just think they had the most interesting day yesterday, and I talked about them a little bit, but I'm interested to hear your take. I'm going in cold. I don't know what you think. What do you think?
I think that, like the Celtics, if you were going to not keep everybody, they did about as well as they possibly could. To come out of this with, assuming this trade happens, which, you know, it's going to take some maneuvering, but I think they'll get it done.
Motivated parties tend to
they'll
find a way.
Figure out a way to get it done. But, you know, getting Al Horford and Josh Richardson is a really interesting move for them. There was talk that they did really like Horford. Obviously, they've seen him a lot in the playoffs. It allows them to not have to play Joel Embiid as much. They can have both him and Al maybe both play 60 games. Which could help them both in the playoffs, right? They have Mike Scott and Tobias Harris who could play up. They have all this size everywhere. But two questions. One, they don't have enough shooting, just like they didn't last year. They're kind of in a similar boat, and they've lost J.J. Redick now. So they have to try to make up for that.
Who felt essential to their ecosystem.
That's right.
On offense. They would two-man game with Embiid.
And they ran a ton of plays for him late in games, even with Jimmy Butler. Brett Brown would run plays for J.J. Redick late, right? Then now they don't have that. So how are they going to solve that? And the other thing, which I was talking to a scout about last night, in the wake of these moves, the first thing, called a scout, the first thing they said was, who is their closer?
They traded
for Jimmy Butler to be their closer. In the playoffs, he was going toe-to-toe with Kawhi Leonard and was, you know, playing as well against him as anybody in the league, right? Now he's not there. Who is going to be doing that? Is it Tobias Harris? Is it Josh Richardson? Are they somehow running stuff for Embiid? Is Ben Simmons taking a leap? Like, who is going to be? Al Horford is not that kind of player, as great as he is. That's not his thing. So that, to me, is a huge question for that group, is who is going to be that guy? Because that was why they went and got Jimmy Butler in the first place, and now they're back to where they were before that, where they don't necessarily have that guy on the roster.
And I think Josh Richardson was, and I love Josh Richardson. I have a Miami Vice t-shirt Josh Richardson's name on the back of it that is now going to be an antique. I do think he was proven to be over his head as the number one option off the dribble,
right?
Or a facsimile of it,
right?
And eventually, Justice Winslow became the point guard of that team, and he was shifted into a different kind of role.
He'll be really nice for them guarding point guard, which is something they struggled with a lot last year, right? When they would go up against Kyrie or some of these guys, they'd be getting roasted because they never really could stick with them. Well, Josh Richardson's going to do that just fine. So that is going to be a really nice fix.
It's a great point. Everyone ate them up until the playoffs when they tightened up a little bit.
And the backup center thing was a problem for them too. And now they've got Al Horford and Joel Embiid. And the way Brett Brown structures his minutes, those two guys probably won't share the court a lot. And you can have one of them out there almost all the time, which is pretty terrifying for other teams. But again, it just comes back to, when they get in the final 6 minutes of a game against a really good team, who's going to have the ball? That, to me, is the biggest question with them, and I'm not sure how they're going to answer it.
And in some ways, it's sort of fun in that, you know, they get to be a little less predictable and try some stuff, which is nice. But you do have to have a fail-safe, and rarely is the fail-safe a back-to-the-basket center.
Right. It's very hard.
So I think the pressure goes on Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris was going to be the overpaid fourth or fifth option.
Yep.
Now he can't be that. Now he has to be the guy with the Clippers who averaged 20 a game and ran a lot of pick and roll.
I mean, they paid Tobias like he's going to be their go-to guy. Like, that has to be the answer for this to work to the level they want, right? Well, I think Tobias has to be the guy who's making big plays in the final 3 minutes of a game.
And there's another answer, too, and that's Ben Simmons. And Ben needs to be able to do something.
Yep.
Something in the half court.
As you've pointed out many times, he cannot just be put in the dunker spot and left without the ball to just hang out. Right? He's got to be a guy who has the ball in his hands in the final 5 minutes making plays. He has to. That has to be the next step. to your point before, when you're talking about max guys, if you're going to pay him a max contract, he needs to be able to make plays in the final 5 minutes of a game.
We may never experience a 24 hours late that again.
I mean, it was unbelievable. The amount of things that, like, look, we all knew this was going to be a consequential summer with the number of names that were involved, but I don't think anybody could have possibly predicted that we would come out of the first, we're not even 24 hours of free agency yet. Basically the only guy left of relevance is Kawhi Leonard.
The big guys.
Even the middle guys. How many of the middle guys are left?
It's like Danny Green.
It's basically Danny Green, Kevon Looney, and DeMarcus, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's not really even other guys left.
Trey Lyles. Maxi Kleba just re-signed with the Mavericks, and Enes Kanter just signed with the Celtics, so take two more names off.
Ooh, that's interesting. I didn't know about that.
Next year. Celtics are going to be a strong team.
Well, yeah, the Enes Kanter move is interesting. I imagine they gave him the room exception.
2 years, $10 million.
Okay, so he got the room exception. So that was their one other move. He will probably start. I'll be very curious to see there how Robert Williams does, the guy they drafted last year out of Texas A&M. They've been talking him up this
time
summer.
Time Lord.
The Time Lord. He's a super big athletic guy though. And if they don't swing a trade, he's going to have to give them minutes. He gives them an element they haven't had, which is a real role guy. Like, he's been compared to Clint Capella coming out of the draft. Like, if he could become that kind of player down the road, they'd be thrilled. But even if he's just a, guy who can crash at the rim and block some shots, it'd be something. But, yeah, I mean, Enes Kanter, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kemba Walker's a pretty damn good offensive five.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Well, now we just wait on the finals, the two-time finals MVP.
You got a prediction?
Oh, hell no. are you kidding me? Now, I will say that the guys and girls I know who work for those teams, everyone has gone silent on what they think is going to happen or what is happening or anything like that. So I have no read on it.
Right.
I will say that it is interesting that the Lakers appear to have signed nobody and are just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well,
and waiting.
I mean, what choice do they have, though?
They don't have enough.
I mean,
the Clippers have the cap flexibility to sign a couple of guys.
Right. They re-signed Patrick Beverley because it didn't hurt them, right? But, the Lakers, if you have a chance to get Kawhi Leonard, you have to wait. And if you don't, like, if you don't get them, I imagine they'll sign DeMarcus, and then I don't know what else they'll do. It'll be fascinating.
That is going to be the one. That's the one. More than KD to Brooklyn, more than anything else, that's the one that tilts the whole summer.
For 2019-20, there's no question.
Who gets
Kawhi? I've been saying it. He's the king of the North, is the kingmaker. I mean, he's the finals MVP. I think right now you have to consider him the best player in the world, given what happened over the past couple of months. And, like you said, if he goes back to Toronto, I think you could argue they're the favorite. If he goes to the Lakers and they have three of the best six players in the league, they're probably the favorites. And if you go to the Clippers, the amount of guys they have around them, they're going to be in the mix too. It's fascinating.
And now we wait. Tim Bontemps, thanks for coming in. I think you notched a save coming out of the bullpen. Although saves are really easy to get. They're the emptiest stat in sports saves. All you got to do is hold a 3-run lead, unless they change that rule, which they might have.
I have no idea.
Thanks.
A lot more baseball talk than I expected on the low post.
Thanks for all your great work over the years, and I'll see you in Vegas soon, I'm sure.
Yes.
When all this is sorted out and we can soak up some bad summer league basketball. Tim Bontemps, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
If you want more reaction to a wild beginning in NBA free agency, you're in luck, because my buddy Brian Windhorst, Windy, the greatest Rob Pelinka impressionist on TV, and several other of ESPN's top insiders are releasing another episode of the Hoop Collective podcast later today, which you can find on your favorite podcast player. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.